Welcome, comrades, welcome. Sit down, rest your weary elbows. There's a bit of Fry and Laurie reference for you to begin. Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 85. I had to check that because my memory is terrible. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't aware, but we are joined by somebody very special. And it's not the guy that I'm staring at right now. It's actually the fact that we're joined by a top 5% in the world in Death Unchained player. We didn't know. Pete's been holding out on us. He's, ooh, you've been maybe playing a bit too much of it.
Possibly.
No such thing.
Definitely not when it comes to video games, and it's really fun. So I do have to get it one day. But yes, we have Pete, and we have Tom back again. You may remember him from a previous episode, our studio guitar man.
Greetings.
Oh, hello.
And it's weekly update time. We're going to come back to you because I've got some questions for you, sir. Pete, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been getting caught out with certain technologies that I had not come across, so I feel slightly embarrassed. I bet you guys have heard it. So I had never come across a polywav before.
I don't know that. Oh, no, I have. Yes, have I? Do tell. Make sure I'm not
right,
being stupid.
I'd never come across such a thing as a polywav. The reason being is that we had got the Rode Brocaster for doing the studio podcast recordings. And once we'd finished last week's recording, I promptly popped it into my door of choice, which happens to be Cubase, and was shocked to find there was only one file.
How many heart attacks did you have at that moment?
Well, I suddenly thought, what's going on? Have we not recorded it? Because I knew that it was actually in multi-track mode, which was...
I remember you confirming it on the
day.
Yeah,
that was a firmware update. The original firmware only supported a stereo output, but subsequently they'd upgraded it. But it only produces one file. Once I'd got it into Cubase, the one file had 10 lanes in it.
Oh, so it's some kind of interleaved situation.
All the recordings are there, but they're all in one file. So I had to get a app to dismember it, pull it apart.
Slice it.
So there was a instant learning curve had to be gleaned within very short order.
Is that how they do surround sound music? Some form of poly-wav?
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
And it seems to be certainly a thing in the recording world, not the musical recording world as such, but possibly
for film and such.
Film, video, there are certain devices that particularly produce this type of file. It was a new one on me, completely.
Yeah,
caught me right out.
Not heard of that one before.
Probably should have known that, having done a dissertation on surround sound formats and all this. Oh well.
Yeah, so that was a bit frantic, I have to say, but the result was okay. The volume levels on the individual lanes wasn't great. I might have to put in a little call to Rode to see what I'm doing in that respect.
Even after you set the gain properly, it just wasn't...
Yeah, what it contains is a stereo track which has the sum of all everything that was being recorded, and that gain was quite high. In fact, it almost looked like it was peaking a bit. But all the other lanes, if you want to call them lanes, or what do you call
channels.
Them? Stems.
Yeah,
we know what you mean.
Multi-channel, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the rest of them are a really quite low volume. Obviously, I could normalise them, but it's not ideal.
Is it possible that, obviously, you added the compression, EQ, de-essing because you could, all of that is only applied to the stereo mixdown thing, and maybe the stems were just the raw feeds from the preamps?
Quite possibly, but they sounded very synthetic in the respect that next time we use it, we'll be switching all those effects off.
And going for cloud lifter type things for the 7Bs, I think you mentioned as well.
Yes, possibly, because I found that I had to run all the stems through Slate Digital.
The Make It Louder Anizer.
The Make It Louder Anizer. No, the mix rack. So I found that I had to run everything through Slate Digital and EQ it all to try and bring it back.
Unsympathetic-anize it.
Yeah, you know what it's like when you overprocess a vocal or a voice and it just doesn't sound right. You can't put your finger on it. It's kind of got it's overcompressed. It's got, it just doesn't. Sounds a bit robotic-y, possibly. You can't, it's not very tangible, but you can, there's something wrong. And the only way I could recover it was by applying various levels of EQ just to try and, so what I'll be doing is switching all the onboard processing off and having a go and seeing what that's like. And maybe over the weeks we can add one.
Bring in certain elements.
Yeah, and see what's effective and what's not. I think particularly there was a thing that's supposed to add a lot of bottom end to give a lot of tone. And because we are recording all male voices and all of our voices tend to be relatively
too much bass.
too low already, adding any more is just over the top. Certainly it was the low end I found myself rolling off. But anyway, yeah, so that was my week.
Report back.
So you buy this technology to improve things and you find yourself having to fight with it to try and I suppose it's learning the kit, isn't it, really?
We'll get there, and the production quality will, of course, increase as it always does. So you may think we're incredibly eloquent, well-spoken, and we never make a mistake, but in real life it's...
synthesizers. I found this on the internet. Notes.
That's what it sounds like if you're here with us in the pub. Thomas! From Gatvol, of course. We need to check up on how your single's been doing. You were talking about that last time you were here.
I believe
how
I was.
How many billions of listens do you have on Spotify? And what's it like from the artist's analytics point of view?
We have been doing rather well.
Nice one.
Certainly compared to where we were before, although, you know, we're definitely not in the...
this single.
So we have seen our numbers increase pretty dramatically, which is only good. We've gone up
from... Well, I see the best numbers. You don't have that less than 1,000 on every track you've uploaded.
Exactly.
That's
so
me.
Very nice. So we're pushing through, as you can see.
Lovely stuff.
So apparently in the last 7 days, we've had nearly 3,000 listeners.
Not bad.
Nearly 5,000 streams and some people followed us.
So just that's a week.
So this is from Drowned, which came out on Thursday last week. Mm. And currently, we're at about 5,000 streams, but I think it's probably higher than that now.
Not bad. I am sorry that I didn't realise that that was out, actually. I was still thinking we were talking about Strange Happiness.
It's okay. Strange Happiness has got nearly 3,000 streams in the last week. We're on 8,000 overall.
Love it.
Yeah, man. Stoked. Feels good.
I did want to pester your brain about the music video process. You said were you doing another one?
So we filmed the last video we're going to do for this body of work on Thursday last week. It was a long day, as it usually is with filming.
Just a single day, though. Pack it all in.
Single day. Wham, bam. Everybody's raring to go. We had good old Terry to help us. He did the filming for us.
Nice.
And he did a great job. And it looks really fantastic. Obviously, it's always it's a long-winded day.
Yeah.
It's a lot of physical exertion. It's quite weird to go from not playing for a long time and then to like, in the flick of the switch, turn on the performance again. As if you're in front of people.
At least it only has to be visual in this particular case.
Exactly, because if you could hear what I was playing, you would realise that I can't play the song anymore.
Oh, no. So it's not as bad as having to practice an entire set for a tour just before a single music video shoot.
No, luckily we don't
That'd
have to do that. But I should really be learning the set because we should be playing a gig soon. But I couldn't say either way.
Well, let us know, because I'll be there. Is Pablo part of your editing team? Does he stitch his stuff together? He did for the last one, I believe.
So Pablo is the main driving force behind the music video creation in general. So he's the guy who owns the camera. He does the editing. Most of the time, he does the storyboarding. Mm-hmm. So it's really his baby, in the way that I do all the production, and that's kind of my baby. His is the making the videos, and then Tyler does all of the marketing. And then Danny, we'll find something for him to do. I'm sure he'll be useful. But yeah, so it's good that we split the jobs in that way.
Not just one person doing the whole lot. That'd be a nightmare.
Exactly. You know, I feel bad for solo artists who have to be everybody in that regard, because it's really difficult. Just me mixing a track takes a long time, let alone having to market the track, film a video or take photos. So I'm really glad that I don't have to do those things, because I'm much more happy.
Yeah.
Let me mix. That's my jam. I don't want to film a video. That's really not my jam.
You stay in it.
Exactly.
When we have gigs, what are we talking in terms of set list? How long does your back catalogue span? How long of a set could you do if you wanted?
That's a very good question.
Off the top of your head. Give me numbers now.
The album's about 45 minutes long.
Nice.
So we could probably do an hour gig.
Yeah. Well, not bad at all.
Yeah.
Love it.
If we were playing a headline.
Okay. Local artists only. By local, actually, you could probably have most of the UK, let's be honest. Your dream lineup that you're in.
Ooh.
You're the one before the headliner.
Okay.
So you get your support, and then you get the headliner, and you're that nice warm-up sandwich in the middle.
Okay. Well, I don't want to sort of say anything bad about who could potentially support us, because they'd probably be better than we are, which isn't hard. But I think it would be Loathe headlining.
Oh, okay, cool.
Big fan of them. Mm. Very, very chunk.
Big chunk.
The biggest. And then for supporting us, that's a really tricky question. This is going to be a very arrogant one, but I would say somebody like Monuments.
That would be a cool gig.
That would. I mean, we definitely don't deserve to be on that lineup, but that would be a really cool gig.
A prog metal tour de force, indeed.
Absolutely.
We'll come back to you later, because I want to pick your brains about these things that you say you don't know anything about, but we'll grab you later. Oh, he's doing his research now. I'll give you my weekly update. What was it, Saturday? Did you have that horrifying rain where you guys were?
Yes.
Yep. Guess where I was? The South Downs on a bike. So I signed up for an event by Glorious Gravel, which it turns out is just a kind of cross-country mountain bike. It wasn't a race, it's a sportive, as the event is known. You just kind of go around and it's sort of fun. You get a beer at the end.
A leisurely A to B.
That's what it was supposed to be. So it was an 80-kilometer course. If you know the South Downs at all, or you know any of the geology of Britain, you'll know that that is almost entirely chalk and flint. And what I didn't know before I turned up is that wet chalk is the single slipperiest surface known to mankind. And when you get a route map, it's often, well, a very common file would be a .gpx. So, you know, GPS units will, you know, navigate you around this little route. You also get an elevation profile, because of course it will do altitude as well. It's just a graph. And I saw it when I downloaded it from the site. They say, oh yeah, it's tomorrow, here's your GPX file. And it was just hills. There was nothing flat on it at all. The problem was, there were other problems. I'm just going to be moaning, because it was an epic. The hills were incredibly steep and really, really long. But when it came back to a downhill, it was incredibly steep and really, really short. So you never got to enjoy any nice cruises along the flat. It was just vertical uphills, and then when you're on the top of the hill, it was 3 million miles an hour rain from all directions at once. And the thing is, maybe it's because I'm English, but I think in approximately 1.5 weeks' time, I'll say, oh, best day of my life. Even though at the time, it was the most miserable occasion of my existence. Oh, yeah. So that chalk, there was a whole stretch of it, kind of medium downhill, it would have been fine. But because it's so slippery, people were just coming off left, right and centre. Sort of the back wheel would go, whing, and then you put a foot down to try and save yourself. And that would go in the opposite direction. And everybody was stacking it. And so I had a puncture there. And Anthony from the ModCaf, who was cycling it with me, he'd sort of steamed up on the hill because he's a vintage mountain biking man. He's got all the techers. So he was sailing up it, no problem. And I was stuck at the bottom. About half an hour later, he sort of cycles back down. I was like, where are you? Helps me fix the puncture. But then a guy coming the opposite way who wasn't part of the event came off and unfortunately hit a very sharp piece of flint and absolutely sliced like half of his elbow open. It was pretty gruesome. But poor Anthony was fixing punctures, he was fixing bikes, he was fixing humans.
Yeah, puncture wounds.
But yeah, because maybe it's an English thing, but I'm sure I will think it's the best day of my life in about a week. I can't wait to do another one. I just hope it's not raining.
Just sounds grim to me.
Yeah.
Yep. I know where I'd rather be.
It was totally grim, but I want to do it again. I don't understand. I'm very confused. How has this happened to me? Anyway, let's move into the world where we are slightly more comfortable because we can sit inside away from the wind, the rain and the misery. Synthesizers. The other day was 808 day and I totally forgot, and Pete's found some little bits of news. Do you want to take these away? I've got one to tack onto the end.
Yes, I have to say that I was completely unaware that such a thing as 808 day existed.
I only was last year because it sprung upon us.
Does anyone know how long it's been running?
Well, let's find out. You plough on and
yes,
I'll do the Googlings.
So last Sunday, the Sunday's just passed, we're currently recording this on a Tuesday, was 808 day. This is obviously gives Roland the ability to advertise their wares. Basically, this year, they are promoting their TR808 plugin. But then they go on for those who possibly want to wear their love for the 808. They also do a jacket. Tom, you were saying you quite like the look of it. I'm not so sure.
It does look quite cool.
It's quite 80s if you're into that.
We were trying to decide if it was leather or not.
Well, it's not. It's a very silky. This photograph doesn't really show it at its best, but it's a sort of thin, silky kind of fabric. Mm. Would you describe that as a kind of, I don't know what
it's
you describe
it as? It's a bomber jacket style.
Bomber jacket. Silky bomber jacket emblazoned with the 808 livery on the back.
The classic white, yellow, orange, red, black kind of colours.
Yeah, so 808 day, which was the 8th of the 8th. I wonder if that's significant, whether Ooh. They particularly pick that date for those numbers.
The internet doesn't say, but the earliest thing I've found is a Wired article saying, happy 808 day from 2008. It's been going
that
for some time.
Because that would have been the 8th of the 8th. in 2008.
I suspect it's a relatively recent, only a
most likely
decade or so. So happy 808 Day, everybody.
Congratulations.
Yay.
And that leads me on to the second one I thought was quite interesting. So DinSync, the notable...
They do modular, don't they? Some modular?
Well, he definitely does some modules, but he's the sort of notable recreator of early Roland equipment.
Oh, there's one of the really popular 303 clones.
Yes. Mm. Well, it's to say, as it says here... It's not a clone, it's a replica.
Mm, yes, of course.
So he is releasing a 808 kit, which will be available. I think they're only done on relatively small runs. It is not exactly the cheapest thing. The numbers I've got for the kit is £398 or $551. And that just gets you the circuit boards and the components. If you want a case, you have to go to a third party. And that will cost you a further €300. So it almost ends up being, I don't know, best part of...
That is more expensive than the TRA.
800 big buckaroos.
Well, I mean, a second-hand ER808 is going to set you back a good condition one. What would you reckon? 1,200? And it's going to it's going to be a 40-year-old drum machine.
Yeah. I mean, actually, compared to the Roland current version, it's not... a million miles off. Yeah, you get to build it yourself. That's great fun. I love that. And it will be cheaper than the System 80 one that you can never get hold of because it's very rarely produced.
So is that the modular one?
Yeah, the Eurorack-sized.
I mean, that is quite attractive, but anything Eurorack is going to be expensive.
Always is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, I would suspect it's going to be a nice thing if you feel brave enough to build it.
It does look quite complicated, doesn't it?
Yes.
If I cared enough for an 808, that would probably be the route I would want to go.
I mean, he's recreations, and he's done the 303 the 909
very favourably, I believe,
and I think he might have done the 606 as well.
Yep, 606 indeed.
His recreations are very faithful, other than there's obviously some bespoke parts that were unique to Roland, but he has got solutions that bypass that. Little bits of technology that substitute for the Roland custom chip.
Yeah, I'm quite fascinated by this digital decap they did. Not really sure what they mean by that. You see that in the...
It's enabled us to run the raw 808 CPU code,
because that would make me think that they've almost worked out what the capacitors can do.
Yeah.
That's how I'm reading
it. I wonder
there,
if it's cap as in capacitors or decap for decapitation, because it's the 808 CPU rather than any capacitor-related stuff. So it would have been one of those little chip doobries of some kind that is definitely not made anymore, and they would have had to try and recreate it.
Could be either a Roland custom chip, or as I have with my SH101, there is a controller chip that does all the interfacing between the keyboard, the sequencer, and the actual synth engine itself. And apparently that can be found in 1980s cash registers. So it's a generic chip from the 80s, but no longer available.
Gotcha.
So you have to find either a salvaged one or have some other substitute device which is going to create the functionality.
It looks like this Pixie platform is what they're using for it.
Yes.
Pretty cool.
I was wondering if it was like the neural DSP guitar processors where it's using artificial intelligence to almost work out what every component in the guitar amp does, which is how the neural DSP stuff works, which is very fascinating.
I would imagine with this, it's not really that clever.
It probably isn't, because this is quite old tech now. You know, this is old school, isn't it?
Another thing that we can add to the illustrious celebration of 808 Day, as we all, I'm sure, we celebrate it at home in our own way, Happy Nerding, who make the FX Aid module. You were sort of
got one of those. We spoke about it last week.
Of course, you got one. I assume a celebration of 808 Day. You can now get 808 drum voice emulation algorithms, if you want them for some reason, on the FX Aid.
Okay, nothing I require, but...
Not at all. You've got the tip-top stuff, haven't you?
Yes, I've got quite a few of the tip-top voices. They're okay. They're quite basic functionality-wise, but, you know, they suffice. My main problem is finding something really decent to trigger them to make them sound interesting.
Yeah. What are you thinking? Trigger sequencer?
I've tried so many so far. I mean, the best one still is the grids, I think.
Yeah?
I think it's most interesting because it's got the normal trigger... But it's also got the...
Accent.
The accent.
Ah, yes. That's the mutable one, isn't it? Mutable grid.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not only got the trigger, it's got the accent.
What do you mean by that?
Accent is normally... It's just going to be a gate, So it will just trigger something. Depending on how the sound producing module works, it will either be the accent trigger will be a higher voltage or something, or it will just be a separate trigger to produce a louder version. So on the drum machines, if you do an accent, whatever's on that step will be louder than the other steps.
And it sort of imparts human element. You know, it doesn't sound so clockwork.
It's very interesting.
Variation.
Yeah, so I think in the mutable grids scenario, it's just another normal gate that you could do something
assigned to whatever you would like.
Yeah, there are modules that will do volume based on how high the voltage on a trigger is, but I don't know if it's that common. Anyway, sidetracked. That was only a small nugget from the happy nerding folks. I do have one more news article on the synth front. Expert Sleepers, you know Expert Sleepers, makers of...
Oh, I think I've seen this.
You have, yes. Makers of the Disting, their most popular module, and lots of interface modules like the USB and ADAT interfaces, utilitarian, always utilitarian, and excellent quality. They've gone, I think, back into the analog world, because I think they've done that before quite a while ago. Don't quote me on that. Either way, we have three modules from them, which they say are not Me Too or clone designs, but they're trying to be, you know, something a little bit different. No sense reissuing the wheel again. We have three modules called Evo, Lorelei, and Beatrix. Interestingly, those are the first three tracks from the Cocteau Twins album Treasure, if you're a fan of them. We have Evo, a resonant low-pass filter, which is two or three pole, and you have voltage control over resonance and cutoff, so it's just a slightly different character than you might find. Three-pole filters aren't very common. You have Lorelei, which is, or Lorelei, I don't know, a VCO with quadrature sine outputs, wave shaping, and cross-modulation options. We then have Beatrix, which is a phaser with voltage control over notch frequencies, depth, and resonance. So some cool options. Definitely go and grab the demo, because you got to hear these things. What has always interested me is not quadrature, but phase-related oscillators. There'd be things like Dr. Octature from a manufacturer that I can't remember.
It's an IntelliGel.
I think it is a Silonics collaboration, potentially. Either way, we're thinking of the same thing. And we've got quadrature sign outputs on here.
I've got one.
Ah,
what a surprise.
I believe also one of the Mannequins modules does something similar. And actually, you can do something like that with Batumi as well, because you have that phase mode. And I don't know that I've ever heard a really cool use for it. What could you think of doing with phase-related similar oscillators?
Because I think the Doctor, how does it pronounce?
Dr. Octature. It's not an easy one.
Are you sure it's not a filter, self-oscillating
yes,
filter?
Yes, it is,
and
you're
I
right.
And I definitely have got one.
Yeah, but you can crank up the resonance and
yes,
it's an oscillator
and
that
have
way.
It oscillate,
yeah,
self-oscillating rather.
Yes.
Obviously you've got all the different phase outputs, but I've never really worked quite out, understood how it works, to be really honest.
Yeah, I mean, I get how it would work, but my question is why?
I don't know, because I can't even get it to work. Well, I can get it to work. I've never been overly impressed with it as a filter, but maybe I suspect I'm using it totally incorrectly.
Let's have a look. I'm going to quickly whiz through the bump for it, see if I can find any hints.
I'm intrigued by that one.
Yeah, because as a studio engineer man, you'll be au fait with phase and polarity.
I mean, they're described as being
at
different degrees, aren't they? It's done in a sort of...
Yeah, so you get 45... 90, 135, 180, 225, 270, 315, 360. Again, why? I don't know.
I guess for the thickness, you have two of those, two different phase options. As you said before, like humanizing something, a way to add
maybe
extra harmonics.
Maybe you use multiple outputs and have the phases kind of competing against each other.
That's what I mean. It's like, for example, you can have like a kick drum mic or two mics on a kick drum, and actually flipping one of them out of phase actually sounds way better.
Yeah.
Because you're pushing the frequencies as opposed to pulling them. So you're getting a more high... Like the balance has shifted more towards top end as opposed to low end. And then flipping it will shift it the other way again. So you get all the low end come through, but you get a very weak top end.
But it just produces... The net result is a better...
Is a better sound.
Yes. So it may be something like that, that you have to use them in combination. It's nothing I've tried. I've normally just taken... Because they're on the output. So I've normally just taken one output and gone, well, this filter's not that exciting. I would imagine it's because I'm completely using incorrectly, but I've never seen, I should really do some YouTube searching and find someone using one. Most probably a good DivKid video.
We hope
on
so.
On his channel that it describes exactly how it should be used properly.
Scrolling through the Mod Wiggler thread, it doesn't appear that there's anything nuts about it if you're just using it as a low-pass filter, but there are mentions of it sounding thick with two Cs, so maybe you're right, Tom.
Okay. Mm.
That's the only thing I could think of, really, because you don't have to deal with any multi-miking or anything like that. You're dealing with making the, you know, the oscillators themselves. Mm. I guess, for example, if you think of like a drum kit, the phase difference against like the room is the only thing that gives it that sense of length,
yeah,
and that sense of thickness. So that's the only thing that I could really think of using.
Hmm. I feel like that's something Akira can probably answer very well. May ask him later. Right. Brings us to the end of the podcast, doesn't it, folks? I wonder if you've noticed, audience, we're actually in the pub, where we do like to be. That is, of course, time for our miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I did not prepare in advance because I'm silly. Pete, I see you scrolling through your phone frantically. He's going to get there. What's he got? He's ready.
Right, this week I've been indulging in a bit of Anthony Bourdain.
Why does the name ring a bell?
Anthony was, unfortunately, was a celebrity chef, author, and host to many travel stroke food programs, mm-hmm. primarily on CNN. I got into his programs sort of in the early 2000s when they were shown on cable television. Mm-hmm. And then latterly, there was bits and pieces that you could watch on YouTube. But recently, you can watch all the back catalogue of his programs officially on a YouTube channel that I've been watching, which is called Real Truth Documentaries.
Hmm.
I mean, there are many other interesting documentaries and programming on there, but I've been particularly focusing on these. Now, unfortunately, he took his own life in 2018, and I found it difficult to watch his programming for a time, but now there's a bit of distance in time between that tragic event and now, I find that I can go back to these and enjoy them again. And so I've been getting stuck in, and I would highly recommend them to everyone. They are a bit more intense than your normal sort of travel stroke food program.
Yeah.
We have Rick Stein.
Rick Stein.
Who does...
And there's another one you mean, isn't there?
Yeah.
He was a politician.
Well, that's just travel. That's...
Not food, yeah.
Yeah. So the food one, it's Rick Stein, and he does various countries. They are contrived, but most television is contrived. But the Anthony Bourdain stuff seemed to be a bit more raw.
Authentic.
Very genuine.
Yes.
You definitely get the lay of the land with him.
Yes.
It's the average person, not the five-star restaurants.
Yeah, and he's certainly a person that was prepared to eat anything. I have to say that some of the stuff looks absolutely delicious, and some of it I don't think I could allow it to pass my lips. But it's still very entertaining. So that's what I've been doing this week, and that's my recommendations. The YouTube channel is called Real Truth Documentaries. As I say, you can catch up on all the Anthony Bourdain Parts Unknown series and many others. I haven't really looked at any of the other bits and pieces. They've got all sorts of, just scrolling through now, truckers, emergency bikers. Yeah, I mean, some of these don't necessarily appeal, but...
Have you seen the Quebec one? The episode he did in Quebec?
Yeah, in fact, I just watched it.
With the two
yeah,
guys.
The two chefs.
They're
yeah.
so funny, man.
Yeah.
Sorry, that wasn't... That's
but
not for the podcast.
I'd recommend this channel just for the Anthony Bourdain alone.
100%.
Lovely stuff. I've been chewing on some not new music, really, on the Spotify these days. There's a couple of new Deadmau5 tracks, Nextra and When the Summer Dies. Those are kind of cool. But I'll do disservice to myself as a Genesis fan. I don't really know much of the Peter Gabriel solo stuff. Tom's pulling a face at me because he's shocked and disappointed at how Pete's doing eyebrows at me. It's all bad. But I was surfing on YouTube, as I'm trying not to do, and I came across, similar to the Live and Loose in Paris Phil Collins gig, there is a whole Peter Gabriel one, which slips my mind, but it prompted me to go back and, you know, listen to the original stuff. So the album will be So, a classic Peter Gabriel album with Red Rain, Sledgehammer, but crucially for me, In Your Eyes really grabbed me. There is the live version from that gig on Spotify too. It's something else.
Yeah, I have
it's
a
great.
I think it's in the loft. I have a VCR of one of the early live tours. And
but if, like me, you've been sitting under a rock and you haven't heard So by Peter Gabriel, get stuck in.
I remember that came out in 1986.
Pete's normally good with these dates.
Six, I want to say.
Wait, let me find out. That's his vote. You're pretty good with the Genesis album years. 86. He's got it. Look
incredible.
At him.
Incredible.
Every time. Mercy Street's on there. Just get going. So, Peter Gabriel. Oh, Tom. It's your time.
So my recommendation is going to be, and this is very shameless, but it's an album I mixed, but it's a great album. It's called It Dulls the Pain by a...
Oh, is it that one dude that you were telling me about that one time a while ago?
Exactly, yes.
Specific.
So great couple of guys. So the band is called Keller, which is K-E-L-L-E-R, and the album is called It Dulls the Pain. It's not just a shameless plug because I mixed it. I genuinely think it's a great album that they wrote, and you should all check it and listen to it.
Genre?
Oh, that's very tricky.
Pick all of the genres.
You stumped me there. If you're a fan of Jeff Buckley, you will dig the album It Dulls the Pain. It's really wears that influence quite a lot on its sleeve, but it's also a new take on the kind of idea.
Lovely stuff. Well, ladles and jelly spoons, thank you so much for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. Please do find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, at Rack Addicts UK, and let us know you're there because we want to talk to you. And I hope you come back for the next one. Bye now.